This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
My next guest, of course, is from Kusatu. We had Kusatu last week. We had the SecGen here. And, of course, talking to aspects of the negotiations and how they were going. Well, today we know what those negotiations have delivered. Maybe not in totality because we've still got Gauteng here and some of those aspects still playing out. And we've got aspects of, you know, how all of this now is going to, play out as in real life. But we have the announcement, in essence, of what the GNU is going to look like. Matthews Parks is spokesperson Kusatu, and we'll bring him into the conversation then just to pick up on this conversation. Matthews Parks, welcome to Power 98.7. Welcome to Power Perspective. How are you, man?
Good evening. Thanks for having us. How's it?
Sure. Lakaman. You know, Matthews, I was talking to Kusatu last week, and I want to pick up on that particular aspect where Kusatu said quite a few things, and it was based on, you know, also the meetings you had just had and some of the statements that you were issuing and being spoken to. And, the language then was, you know what, we're angry that we hear, if this is just me, just recalling and summarizing that particular space, we're angry that we hear, we shouldn't be here, but we are here now. And, you know, we're in these negotiations and they're happening. But what we don't want to happen is we don't want, you know, labor issues, we don't want the employment issues, we don't want, you know, aspects of the economy to go this way. We don't want, really, you don't want to be negotiating on victories that already won and policy engagements that are already there. And that particular route that, you know, has already been followed in that particular space. The one aspect that I, was also aware of was last week there was still, you know, when I was talking to Kusatu, there was the sense that you were not yet, as Kusatu, engaged in a process of what the cabinet would look like and or whatever. You were still on the outside. Here's a question to you just to start the conversation. Were you eventually let into the finer details and the finer, you know, fine print of the numbers, the who, the where, the what, and the how that it would negotiate? Because as a given, I had also put it that it's been traditional that the ANC and the president would talk to Kusatu, would talk to the SACP, would talk to the various leagues and say, this is more or less where I'm going. Did that change somewhat? Because it was also in your statement where you said, we're hoping that the president will still come and engage us around this particular aspect.
Look, yes and no. It's always a bit of a contested, complicated issue.
Sure.
It's always been a complicated when it's just the ANC, the SACP, and Kusatu. It became more complicated now because now there are 10 parties in the GNU, and the ANC didn't have a 51% majority. But no, we had had some discussion with the ANC, with the president. We had an alliance secretariat just after elections. We had an alliance political council, which is the leadership of the alliance partners. And we were also called in to meet with the president yesterday, and the ANC, the party, SANCO, and Kusatu leadership to discuss inputs on the ANC contingent cabinet, not the opposition parties, but the ANC contingent. Mm. So yes, there were some discussions, not perfect. I think it could have been some better aspects to it, but yes, there were some discussions.
Sure. Let me just ask you, Matthew, just on that particular aspect, because you can only gauge yourself really on the ANC contingent and how you go forward and hope that everybody else slots in, you know, and when they do slot in, it's on the basis of transformation, redress and national unity and aspects of the constitution and all of that, and so that they don't deviate from those particular aspects. When it comes to the ANC contingent, did you leave the room pretty happy that, you know, with what is still on the table where the ANC is concerned and the influence that the president has as a collective over government, that, you know, you pretty much don't, you've got concerns, but maybe they're not as big as you thought they were, or, you know, How did you leave the room? I'm trying to work out how you left the room. Were you kind of okay? Were you reassured that, you know, things are still on track?
Look, one of the orders are private conversations.
Yeah.
But look, the macro level, obviously we had hoped for an ANC majority. That didn't happen.
Yeah, true.
They decided otherwise. So that they forced political parties with very different views and ideologies, often not good histories, to work together. It meant that ANC now had to share cabinet. So you had 32 ministers, of which 12 would be given to the opposition party.
Yeah.
Any portfolio is important to a particular sector or constituency. It's not easy. I think for us, we had kind of focused on what are the key economic portfolios which impact upon workers, like unemployment and labor, where the labor laws are enshrined, the labor market institutions like the unemployment insurance fund, the job creation programs are located. That's for us a sacrosanct.
Yeah.
Especially when you have political parties outside the ANC who have a history of opposing our labor laws and workers' rights. Equally, we thought trade industry is also critical because that's where you give support to local industries, which help to create local jobs. That's where you can advance broad-based black economic empowerment and the transformation agenda. Similarly, we felt other critical civic and labor portfolios are also important, be it police or justice, be it health or land reform or transport and electricity, which are key to the economy. So, when we were able to preserve key portfolios for ANC deployees, we were happy with that. We don't know all the ministers. There's quite a few new faces.
Yeah.
I think maybe everyone new to parliament. So it's going to be a bit of a learning curve, but we are reaching out to all the ministers to wish them well. And also say, let's see, how can we engage with each other? How can we work together? And we'll have to work and engage with all ministers of government, especially which political party. Where they do well, we'll cheer them on and encourage them. Where we can assist, we'll do so. But where they misbehave, we'll also endeavor to make their lives miserable. So from outside, it's an open hand, but if they undermine workers' rights or the transformation agenda, then of course we'll respond accordingly. But we really do hope they will work with workers, with us, and really work to kind of fix the state, grow the economy, deal with crime and corruption and so forth. But it's going to be a tough learning curve for all of us.
Sure. You mentioned the many, many new faces and the many that we don't know, and you're right about that. Diverse representation, you're talking to women and youth is included, and you can see the kind of numbers there. I saw your statement saying they must hit the ground running, and that you noted the announcement, unlocking the economy, creating decent permanent jobs, all of these particular aspects. The playing field, though, is one where there's a 1% growth in the economy over the last couple of years. How do you see them, even though we have names put forward and, things have been negotiated? The playing field is still a tough one. Even as it is for government, so it'll be for COSATU, so it'll be for business and whatever, when, it's a paltry 1% that's been, economic growth over the last couple of years. How much of leeway, in essence, I'm trying to ask, are you giving them based on the playing field that they on, despite, what colors they come dressed in?
I think, we must give all of them a benefit of the doubt. Even those who are brand new, no one is born a minister. Let's give them all the benefit of the doubt. And I think all of us do want to see them succeed. None of us is cheering on and wishing that they don't succeed, given our many, many challenges. We ultimately have to prove it, but I think society and workers in particular are correct to be exhausted.
Yeah.
And they're correct to expect better from ministers. They're correct to say, look, you need to do better, you need to do better quickly. And I think they should also realize that politicians across party lines, that society is exhausted. We have a 42% unemployment rate. We've had endemic levels of crime and corruption. Women go through horrific levels of violence at the home and in communities. Public services are really struggling, from schools to police stations to hospitals to home affairs, to unemployment insurance fund offices. Society pays taxes. Everybody pays taxes, not just the rich. People pay VAT, even unemployed pay tax. So society has a right to hold government accountable and say, you need to do much better. And if they don't, I mean, well, we've seen the consequences in this election. Society punishes political parties that they feel they have not dealt with the issues timely. We have local elections in 2 years' time.
Mm.
So politicians would be wise to pull up the socks and move with great, great speed.
Mm.
I mean, I think if you look at the recent explosion of violence in Kenya,
yeah.
You know, previously seen uprisings in Egypt and Tunisia, and often it can be a very small thing. Like in Tunisia, there's a police officer who harassed a fruit hawker
mm.
who then committed suicide. That president had to flee days later. So it's a wake-up call, and I think we should be concerned when you have about a third of eligible voters didn't register, and about half of, well, 40% of voters who are registered didn't vote.
Mm.
It's also, you know, a wake-up call to say we're losing the confidence of society if we don't address these issues quickly.
Yeah.
I think we don't expect perfect heaven on earth overnight, but it's fair to expect progress with regards to unemployment, growing the economy, fixing the state.
Mm.
Matthew, you know, the COSATU has been a regular where when it criticizes government on austerity measures and you know, in that particular space where government has put those forward and you know, COSATU has come back and said, you know what, it's not helping the cause and it's actually, you know, leading to job redundancy and the austerity measures don't work. And so we it's something that we can ill afford. Here's something where government moved and put forward austerity measures, but we have now one of the largest, people are talking about bloated cabinets, government of the day. And if I'm just talking about from a ministerial perspective, 32 ministers, 42 deputy ministers, the enlargement of from 36 to 42 deputy ministers, from 30 to 32 ministers, in essence creating departments and ministries that'll now even have to engage in more people in the system, more costs. The bill on benefits and perks and the salaries and whatever. So you've got the austerity measure conversation on the one side that says we have to engage in cutting costs and this is what we're doing. And on this particular front, you know, there's almost an allowance because it's a GNU and, you know, because of the terrain that it's happening in, that we allow for a bloated cabinet of this particular nature. Do you have a point of view on the size of this cabinet? Do you have a point of view that, you know, either says it should be smaller or, you know, more tighter regulated, or, you know, is it what it is because of the situation that we're in?
No, without a doubt it's too large. Without a doubt. We had made proposals in the previous term. We made proposals in this term. Ideally, the cabinet should have been about 22 ministers.
Mm.
Between 22 and 24, I don't think you can go below that because then you end up creating these giant, unwieldy portfolios which end up getting neglected because they're just so huge.
Yeah.
You don't need 32 ministers. But one can understand this GNU, we have to accommodate now 10 new parties. It is inevitable you're not going to decrease it. As a president wanted to do, you're actually forced to increase it slightly. So not too huge a jump from 28 to 32, not great.
Yeah.
Some dramas should not have been separated. It doesn't make sense. But look, it's not the end of the world. But the jump from, you know, 32 to 42, 43 deputy ministers is just nonsensical.
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense.
Especially when a lot of people already question, you know, the essence of deputy ministers. And in a lot of these portfolios, we see two of them in essence.
Yeah, so look, look in the broader scheme of things, you know, in a budget of 2 trillion rand, you know, 10 extra deputy ministers are not going to collapse the budget.
Mm.
But symbolically, they are expensive.
Yeah.
You know, each deputy minister gets a nice salary. But then we get a point about 11 staff and there's accompanying support for them. But look, I think the more important thing is symbolically, for telling nurses and teachers there's limited salaries available, et cetera.
Yeah.
Then, you know, that sends a wrong message. And we're going to remind the politicians in Parliament, going to come budget time, when they make their noise about the wage bill, we're going to ask them to make that noise to themselves. Because time and again, they have, across party lines, have sought to say the wage bill out of control, which is not. Yet when it comes to themselves, they gladly vote for increases for themselves. Mm. In fact, they become very agitated, they don't get an increase. And, you know, look, so in the ministerial handbook, ministers can get, I think, about 15 staff, deputy ministers, 11
yeah.
staff.
Mm.
Let's see which of them decline to fill all of those positions, because they don't need all of them.
Yeah.
Let's see which of them decline to get new ministerial cars. And you'll find some ministers that, like previously, the previous minister of trade and industry, Brian Patel, didn't buy a new car. He took a hit. He just retained the existing 10-year-old car.
Mm.
So some have been modest, but others have been less than modest. So it's unfortunate because some of the departments we know have not able to fill vacancies, yet they now have two deputy ministers.
Yeah.
So that, for us, it's symbolically, it just sends the wrong message.
Sure. Where would you, and maybe this is an unfair question, Matthew, you know, because, you know, COSATU being a trade union and watching things from the outside, just as a lot of other people would, I ask it in the light of, you know, maybe, and I'll say it, maybe education and where basic education is, because we've got Gwarube who's there now, Siviwe. Gwarube, and that would have moved from Angie, who would have, you know, been in that position for somewhat of 15 years. SATU, you know, of course, Federation in alliance with ANC, you know, in the COSATU umbrella, not really happy with that particular, you know, appointment that was made there. You know, are you in the same space? Do you understand SATU's, you know, maybe annoyance or their anger or their, you know, just unhappiness with that particular appointment? And would there be other appointments where you also went, okay, I see that, but not really happy about that too?
Yeah, we share SATU's concerns. I mean, SATU is COSATU, we are SATU.
Yeah, yeah.
We share the concerns of all the unions with regards to political parties like the DA, like the FF Plus, like the Patriotic Alliance, which have a history of opposing the labor laws, like the DA, which has a history with the FF Plus of opposing transformation.
Mm.
So we really hope sincerely these parties will evolve from the opposition bench where they've been for their entire lives to become responsible members of government, led by the ANC, and really accept the transformation agenda, accept the rule of law, and all of our laws, and that includes our labor laws. I think, fortunately, most of these political parties often actually don't come with new policies of their own, not mm-hmm. always, but mm-hmm. often.
Mm-hmm.
They often just simply say, no, no, elect us. We'll implement the existing government policy better than the ANC.
Mm.
But, yeah, it's up to these parties to prove themselves, because Satu is right to say, you know, when the DA has campaigned against teachers' rights in the schools for years, during the election campaign, the DA unveiled a manifesto which said they will scrap the minimum wage, so exempt SMEs from all the labor laws except the BCA. They'll collapse a whole variety of hard-won workers' rights that took decades to achieve. So it can't be surprising workers are irritated. But look, you know, we accept political parties now in the GNU, including those we have not supported. It's up to them to prove themselves to us, and let's hope they rise to the occasion that they walk away from these offences, and they really kind of, you know, set us on the right path. But the ball is in their court. If they evolve and they behave, we'll welcome that. But if they misbehave, obviously, we'll, you know, express our frustrations.
Sure. Matthew, just as I let you go, there's that whole interplay between policy and oversight. So let's just deal with the policy aspect. And I think there's a crucial aspect that you raised, and I just want to touch on that, where, of course, policy in essence already made, government already going in a particular route where a lot of things are concerned, and, you know, new people will come in and maybe their interpretation or maybe their implementation of something will be maybe just a little bit different from another one. But in essence, tweak, you know, something to their liking, but not ultimately, you know, reinvent the wheel whilst they are sitting there in the vehicle. Is that a feeling you have as well, that yes, we've got new faces from different political parties that are going to be sitting in these portfolios, but in essence, not going to be able to do much because, you know, policy and stuff is already written and there's a direction already taken. And what's going to, in essence, happen maybe is, like you say, they'll just take the particular policy and maybe grandstand by showing that they can do it better than the ANC can.
I think it's a mixture of both. Look, you know, policies, legislation, budgets, programs are approved by cabinet. But obviously when a minister occupies a portfolio, they do, you know, you do cede operational control of that portfolio on a daily basis to them on many fronts. So it's a bit of a mixture of the two. It also means that we as COSATU have been extra vigilant at NEDLAC, in the Alliance, at Parliament, that if anything falls through the cracks, we need to be able to deal with it then. Because even when the ANC ruled by itself, things fell through the cracks as well. At times, ministers would adopt policies or submit legislation which should be offensive or should not be in line with the ANC's own manifesto. So this is obviously going to be more difficult with the 11 political parties. And I think where there is difference of opinion, ideally you're able to find ways to resolve them. And most times, if people are sober, mature, and willing to listen and hear each other, you can find a lot of ways to do so. You know, for example, the DA has made a lot of noise around this basic education laws member. And unfortunately, in the excitement of elections, there's been a huge amount of fake news going around. People say, well, this bill says kids will be allowed to have abortions in kindergarten or crèche. People in grade L will be taught about sex and what.
That's the billable,
and,
right?
Yeah, the billable. And if you look at the bill itself, doesn't have any of that stuff. But you might find, for example, that there's one of the concerns that you in Africa, other Afrikaans schools have raised is about the language of instruction. And even there, I don't think if you had several people, you would not be able to find a common sense resolution guided by the Constitution, which recognizes 11 official languages or 12 official languages now, but also recognizes people's diversity and the need for inclusivity. So if people are willing to put aside a little bit of point scoring and see how can you find each other, you can. I think it's a little bit easier for us as COSATU because, you know, unions talk to employers they don't like all the time. We find ways to hear each other. At NEDLAC, we sit with business all the time. I mean, we have many different viewpoints. But we'll listen to each other and hear each other and we'll see either way we can find each other in a common way. And I think most times, 90% of times, if you try, you can find a common sense solution, compromise, which everyone can be happy with. We hope this journey of Virginia will help some of these political parties to do so. But we also have seen, you know, over the past 5 years plus, some of these were parties are willing to find each other. You know, we negotiated the two-part pension reforms through Parliament. We managed to get support for that. It was a COSATU initiative, but we got support for that from the ANC, from other political parties, and when it eventually passed through Parliament, all parties endorsed it. It's not always the case. Other bills, there's divisions. But in many instances, you can find each other. It's a little bit of extra work, but it should not be impossible on many instances.
Matthew Sparks, spokesperson COSATU, thank you so much for coming on to Power Perspective.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. That's Matthew Sparks, spokesperson COSATU.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.